Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks so much for joining us today. We have a great conversation lined up, continuing our conversation on the vocations, the many vocations, beautiful vocations of women this week. And today we're going to talk with some moms who have made the choice to be stay-at-home moms and also homeschoolers. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program, for partnering with us and being an underwriter for Faith and Family here at Worldwide KFUO. So go check out their information. Go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section there. You'll find the CUW logo, Concordia University, Wisconsin, in our sponsor section. Click on it. It'll take you to their page. You can find out about the programs they have to offer, where they're located, all the great things that they're doing with Concordia University, Wisconsin. So go check it out. And thank you, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting the program. Well, joining us by phone today, we have two guests. Our first guest is Edie Wadsworth. She's been a guest on Faith and Family before. She's also a blogger at lifeingraceblog.com. Good morning, Edie.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing, Andy?
Good. Welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Great. Thanks. I've enjoyed all the pictures I've seen lately, particularly the food on your blog.
Yeah, I cook way too much.
Well, you know, I eat way too much, so there we go.
It works out perfect.
It does. And by looking at the pictures of the food, it makes me want to eat even more. So.
Oh, I know.
Well, I want to invite our second guest, our other guest today, Corey Wysocki, a stay-at-home mom and also a certified director of Christian education. Good morning, Corey.
Hi, Andy.
Thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Oh, my pleasure.
Welcome back. You've been a guest as well before.
Yeah, with my husband.
Yeah, with James, the firefighter.
James the firefighter.
Well, our all week long, we are talking about the many vocations of women, and we're covering it from various angles. Earlier this week, we talked about the vocation of deaconesses. We talked about the vocation of pastors' wives, of wives of busy pastors. Yesterday, we talked about the vocations of single women. Today, we're talking about the vocations of women, particularly from the angle of moms who are who've made the choice to be stay-at-home moms, but also just about the vocation of moms in general. We're going to talk about that today. And then tomorrow we've got some great books to look at from Concordia Publishing House on the vocations of women. So let's start with your stories. I know we've heard from each of you before in the past about your stories, but for our listeners who aren't familiar with them, I'd like to hear your stories about where you grew up and the path to becoming a wife and mom and where you are presently today. Let's start with Edie.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a small town in eastern Tennessee, and so I'm from the South. I'm one of not very many Lutherans from the South. But I actually had kids early on and then decided to go to medical school. So I went through medical school with two kids and then worked for a few years and then had two more little girls after that. And when my third daughter was in kindergarten, she really struggled and not at all with the school part, just kind of an attachment issue, and she wanted to come home. And so after working for a few years in family practice, I gave up my job and came home with the girls and started homeschooling the two youngest. And so we did that for about 5 years, and they just went back to school this year. And so I guess it just keeps transitioning, you know, and I've enjoyed all aspects of the different vocations. And I think the thing that I've learned so much about this beautiful teaching is that no matter where you are in your life, there's always neighbors who need you, neighbors who need your love and service and care. And so now I'm able to do that at home and from my website and, you know, mostly toward my family, but also other women that I'm able to share with. So that's kind of how I got here.
And what a neat story. It just to as you pointed out, it really demonstrates that life is always in flux, always changing, always making transitions, especially when it comes to family life.
Yep. Yeah. And I think the one constant thing is that, you know, Christ has given us everything we need in himself, which frees us up to really, you know, focus on the people around us. And there's no shortage of people and there's no shortage of their needs. And I think that, you know, it makes it pretty easy to actually live out vocation no matter where you find yourself. And, you know, if I need to go back to work to help our family in that way, I could always do that. But I realize that what I'm doing at home is important, and these little neighbors that I'm called to serve are just as important as when I was prescribing, you know, medicine for hypertension. So thankfully God can use us in all different ways.
Now you're prescribing medicine for your own hypertension?
No,
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Corey, tell us about your background, where you grew up, and what led to where you are now.
I grew up in the Milwaukee area and ended up going, went to Lutheran grade school, Lutheran high school, ended up at Concordia in River Forest, now Chicago, for teaching. I knew little on, talked about vocation, when God plants that in your heart, that I was going to be a teacher. And I started as a secondary ed major, with a theology minor, really just chomping at the bit to teach high school students about the Bible and Christ, and quickly changed my major to the DCE certification, and served as a youth person in Crystal Lake, one of the suburbs of Chicago, for 5 years. And then my husband was teaching fifth grade at the time there. And then we moved out to Rockford when I took a call to be the director of discipleship. And he continued to teach fifth grade at another Lutheran church and school. Then when he pursued the firefighting career, which has been something that God placed on his heart early on, I was able to start cutting back hours, and eventually he was in a position where I could stop working for the church altogether to come home and start homeschooling. Our oldest was 5 at the time. That was 2 years ago, and I never, ever, ever thought I would be a stay-at-home mom. Ever. And had someone told me we would be doing this when we got married, I would have just laughed at them. So it's been amazing. We just are in our final month or so of our second year of homeschooling. We joined a group called Classical Conversations, and I ended up, after about 6 months of starting homeschooling with them, took a leadership position, a management position with them, and have continued in that this year. And also just has, when we were looking at that position as a possibility for some income needs, we realized that it was not going to exactly meet the needs on that level, but it was very, very clear that this was something God had prepared me for and was calling me into. So, I'm learning that when he gifts you and wires you in a particular way for a particular type of service, opportunities just find you, whether you're looking for them or not.
It's kind of an Ephesians 2:10 sort of thing, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, what do you understand your vocations as wife and mother to be? What, when you think about vocation, the vocation of wife, the vocation of mother, what are the things that come to mind? What are the things that you picture? Because I know, Corey, you said, I never pictured myself being a stay-at-home mom, and now you are. What were the things that came to mind before when thinking about wife and mom, or maybe a stay-at-home mom?
I grew up in a home where mom worked, so it just was never really a part of our life to see that. I started to meet some people in college who had moms, and then when we were in ministry, you know, seeing some areas there where moms were staying home. I just need to be a teacher, and God wired me to do that, and I spent a lot of money on my education to do that. So I should use it. And then once I started having children and working outside of the home, while my congregation was incredibly supportive of that and gave me lots of flexibility to try to balance it out, I still felt just a strong, strong tug at being home even more. And then when James went into firefighting, I guess we thought we would do school wherever Daddy was teaching. And when he wasn't teaching anymore, we started looking into the homeschool option. And now I love it. I think it's the best thing we can do for our children right now. And I'm really excited to see where God takes us on that journey.
Edie, what do you picture when you hear vocation of wife, vocation of mother? What comes to mind?
Well, I so loved what Corey said and just part of her story because it resonates with me too. And I feel like, you know, sometimes I can just look at the facts of my life and say, how in the world did this happen? And how did I end up here doing this? But God doesn't waste any of it, you know, and all the training and all the schooling that I went through, I feel like he didn't waste it at all. And I'm just thankful for that. But even though at the time I couldn't have seen what I would be doing years later, I feel like it was perfect training now for what I'm doing. And just the discipline to work hard. And I think, you know, it's hard for women. And I do, you know, there's so many beautiful things about being a mother and a wife, and so much of it that is, that feels mundane. You know, you do the same load of laundry, you wash the same dishes, you calm the same fears. You know, you feel like there's a lot of it that's mundane. But when we realize that, when we do those acts of care and kindness to the people that we live with and that we love, that's as if we were doing it to Christ. And then it kind of changes that for me. It really makes it, I see the importance of all the little things I do. And, you know, when I was in the evangelical church, I don't know if I said this, but I didn't grow up Lutheran, so I'm one of those annoying, very enthusiastic new Lutherans. And so when I first learned about this vocation, it was so freeing for me because I had always sought ways to be close to Jesus, to serve God, to be, you know, a good Christian, and I had always sought for ways to do that. And you realize in vocation that you have the opportunity to serve him all the time. When your 10-year-old needs breakfast and your baby needs a 3 a.m. feeding and your husband needs his clothes ironed, all those are just opportunities, really, to serve not just the needs of those people, but really, you know, to serve Christ. And that is so freeing when you can get, you know, just discouraged in the mundane chores that, you know, that stay-at-home moms are often burdened with. But, you know, I think we all do have our cross to bear, and sometimes it feels like a cross, but I really try to remember that this is really a way to serve Christ directly. So
the vocations of wife and mother are vocations in which we serve our neighbor, whether they're the neighbor who happens to be our child at 3 a.m. who has a need, or, as you said, whether it's the spouse, the husband who needs support as well. Whatever the need may be, it's a way of serving your neighbor. And by serving your neighbor, you're also serving your Lord.
Yes. And I think C.S. Lewis was the person who said that your neighbor is the most sacred thing presented to your senses aside from the Blessed Sacrament. And I know that when I approach communion, there is this sense that you realize that this is mysterious and that, you know, God is doing something miraculous here. But also when, you know, in our daily interactions with our neighbors, there's that same sacredness and mystery. And I think if we can learn to see it that way, it has so opened my eyes to the different, to just so many opportunities to serve that wouldn't really feel like serving and maybe wouldn't even qualify as serving, but you realize that, you know, he's present in all the details and in all the mundane. And so it's been freeing because I think if I hadn't had that, I could, you know, it would be easy to build some resentment, I think, you know, and I think that women who are educated and strong and smart, and if you're, pretty driven, I think that sometimes facing what you might need to do for your family for a time or for a while, facing staying at home, although I love it so much and I feel so blessed to do it, I didn't always feel that way. And the teaching on vocation has really given me so much clarity and just so much joy in what I do, instead of, building a resentment that, oh, I could be doing something really important. No, I am doing something very important. So.
You both have brought this up, that there are things about your vocation, some that were choices, some that were not necessarily choices, on your part at least. What about your vocations is intentional or is an intentional choice on your part? And what about your vocations is something that's been given or perhaps even maybe imposed? Corey?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, I suppose being knit together in my mother's womb as a woman set me up for these. I didn't have a choice in that. I would think that where I see vocation as being choice or not choice, I believe that God gifts and wires us for a particular niche in life. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Ephesians 2:10, he's prepared works for us in advance. And all we really need to do is walk in them. So the choice that we make to walk in the path that God's already laid out for us, I think are the times where, he can say, he lays it out and says, are you going to walk this way with me? I've got this plan for you. Are you going to come along? And I have had just some real heart to heart with him lately on those next steps, and really appreciate what Didi has said and the idea of sometimes we are strong, driven women and we go for it, and sometimes we are looked at as foolish when we choose not to go for the drive that would pull us away from our family and stay more centered in the role of wife and mother, because we might be seen as gifted in other ways, and it's a strong strong battle I think that many women are facing right today, and myself included, as we look to some things in our immediate future, being able to discern, okay, Lord, we know that you will bless if we choose one step, or if we choose another step, and you will work that out for your purposes, but we want to be faithful in making the choice that is the best and that aligns most closely with your will, so that he can be glorified. We know that he will glorify himself in whatever direction we choose. He can do that, but I really want to be faithful to what those works that he's laid out before me. So I don't know that I have a ton of choice in the matter. I do think he gives me some choices, but like I said, I think when I step outside or maybe choose something else, he'll show me and give me some reminders of how to step back more closely in line with the path he's laid out.
There's freedom there, the freedom in Christ to be faithful to what you've been given, is what I hear you saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Edie, what about your vocations is intentional and what is given or perhaps even imposed?
Oh my goodness. I feel like all the things that I outright, made a direct choice, I feel like were all the wrong ones. and then he kind of gently, picks up all the pieces and makes something beautiful from all those parts and pieces. So I don't know. I feel like the older I get and the more I just am steeped in his word and in sacrament, I feel like just the less I know for sure about, just about questions like that. And so I really do try to, you know, follow my giftings and callings. Like Corey said, I'm definitely gifted in certain ways and not gifted in certain ways. And I used to beat myself up because I'm not, you know, I don't do stay-at-home momming like some people do. But then I realized that I have my own, you know, unique set of gifts. And I just have to learn to live in that and not wish that I had a different set of gifts. And I think, too, you know, even the children we are given. I remember when I had my third daughter, she was really hard, and I had had two easy kids up to that. And if you have kids who are easy to raise, you can get so self-righteous and think that you're such a good mom. And then you have a child that's difficult to raise, and it's so humbling and so, I mean, it made me, all of a sudden I felt like I must be the worst mom in the world. And what I have just realized over the years is that it has very little to do with me, that these are individuals made by God with their own set of gifts, their own set of personalities. And that to me has been difficult. Just, you know, trying to be a good mom to very different children and realizing that that doesn't look like what it looks like for everyone else. But it certainly has made me way less judgmental about other people's parenting and just helped me see my own flaws. Sometimes I feel like the people in my life that God has exactly given me, these people in my life to show me my own sin. And that if I hadn't had a difficult child, or if I hadn't had a spouse who's very honest and forthright and German Lutheran, you know, that I wouldn't have been able to see some of my own, you know, terrible parts. And I think it's really helped to show me my own sin and really helped me grow and repent and, so I think that just those things that we're given, that, you know, that's not really a choice. This is the road that you've been given, and God is so faithful to use it all to make us who He wants us to be, and to really grow us, and to dig up all the hard, stony parts of us, and give us a heart of flesh. And I think He uses all those things to do that. And so I'm thankful that I don't get to make all the choices.
My theory on why some families get the easy child or easy children first is so that God does that so that you'll be open to having more children.
Yeah, exactly.
We've said that several times about our son. He's a pretty easygoing kid right now for the most part. He's a lot of fun. He's a pretty joyful child. And so when he's laughing and giggling, my wife and I say to one another, well, I guess that God has given us the easy child the first time around so that we'll be more open to having more children.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, and I think, you know, I look at the relationship I have with her now, and oh, what a joy she is. She's 13 and just a beautiful girl with a tender heart. And it's almost as if God used those hard parts of those years that were difficult with her to really change both of us. And I can't imagine my life without her. But I'm telling you that, you know, when she was three, I was back to reading all the books of how to raise kids again, even though I had two already. So, you know, I think that scripture that says that childbearing will save us, I see that in so many ways, that our kids are really there to grow us up. And we think we're the ones doing the parenting, but I'm not sure about that.
We're discussing the vocation of mom today, wife and mother today on Faith and Family. And we need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue the conversation with Edie and Corey right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson. You know, the springtime of the year ushers in glorious indicators of God's creative genius. From the opening of a flower to the dogwoods and other blooming trees to the majesty of an unforgettable spring sunset. The psalmist wrote, "By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth." Join me Sunday for Jubilation, and I'll talk about it. That's Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Statistics from the pro-abortion side reveal about half of women who have abortions have repeat abortions. This means they're using abortion as a primary or backup method of birth control. It's not unusual to read about a woman having four or more abortions in her lifetime. A celebrity wannabe in the United Kingdom recently made headlines by deciding to abort her baby late in pregnancy to get a part in a reality show called Big Brother. She said instead of having a baby, she'd be famous, driving a bright pink Range Rover and buying a big house. Nothing will get in my way. Countless women like her don't yet realize the memory of killing their unborn babies will far outweigh the enjoyment of Range Rovers and houses. Please pray that God will touch their hearts.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Worldwide KFUO Salute Our Day sponsor on this Thursday, May 8th, 2014. Today's Day sponsor is Sandra Grody. Today's Day sponsor has made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in celebration of Sandra's husband, Paul, as they celebrate his 70th birthday. Once again, we say thank you to Sandra Grody of St. Charles, Missouri, today's Worldwide KFUO Day sponsor. Happy birthday, Paul.
Jesus once said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest." I'm Mark Hawkinson. You know, life can be quite tough at times, from scary CT scans to job loss or marital difficulties. However, good news, God's scan of your life is clear. Jesus died. He took away that progressive sin disease. I invite you to join me in celebrating that clear spiritual scan. It's Moments of Assurance Sunday at 9:15 a.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
More than 175 American Christian leaders are expressing concern and support for embattled Christians in Egypt, Iraq, and Syria. Catholic, evangelical, and Orthodox Christian leaders have signed a pledge of solidarity and call to action to save some of the world's most ancient Christian communities from being driven into exile or extinction. They were joined in Washington by Canon Andrew White of St. George Anglican Church in Baghdad, who said,
"I have been shot at. I have been kidnapped. I have been thrown into rooms with chopped off fingers and toes."
The Reverend Leith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals, said,
"We call on American Christians and churches to pray and to act. So our pledge of solidarity asks for review of foreign aid, appointment of a special envoy,
and aid to religious refugees." I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and today we are talking about the vocations of moms, wives and moms, and we're talking with Edie Wadsworth. She is a stay-at-home mom and blogger at lifeingraceblog.com, and Corey Wysocki. She's a stay-at-home mom and also a certified director of Christian education. Great conversation before the break. We were talking about whether vocation, aspects of vocation are choices or something that's given to us, and it sounds like it's all given to us with freedom in for choices in many aspects of it. Well, I think I have to clarify something. I referred to both of you as stay-at-home moms, but I don't know if either one of you really stay at home much. I don't know. Is it? Do we have a myth to dispel here? What do you think, Corey?
We stay at home, quote unquote, mommies. I think, just like any category, kind of fall on a particular continuum. So I know some stay-at-home moms who seem to never be home. I know others who that's all they want to do is be at home. We don't do too poorly with staying at home. We do have some things that take us out here and there. I heard one mom talk about it once as as a tire on, let's say, a bike tire, and you've got the center, let's say the center is your home, and all the spokes are the ways that you go out from your home, and then the total outside is the tire itself or the rim. And she was talking about it's okay to be, you know, popping out and stuff, but where is the center? Where do you want most of your life to be lived? Do you want it to be focused all on the rim? And then your home is really just a place where you sleep and maybe eat occasionally? Or do you want to really spend some time there nurturing and cultivating and growing the relationships within that family and within that home? And then just have those occasional times where you're living life mostly in the center, but on occasion, you know, you got to go to the grocery store, have a play date here and there just to spice things up. So, and I think about that a lot when I'm looking at our schedule and how much time are we actually being connected to one another at home, and where are we always running around? So I like the analogy she used there.
I know some of the families, the stay-at-home moms and homeschool families that I'm connected with, you know, between swim and dance and sports and, you know, music lessons and things like that, they seem to be on the run quite a bit.
Yeah.
Edie, what about you? Does stay-at-home mom really describe you?
Well, this was the hardest part for me, I think, when I started staying home. I realized the first year I did it, I actually wasn't staying home because I had never really seen that modeled. My mom was a single parent, and so I'd never, you know, I wasn't sure, what do you do all day when you're home? And this was the year before I started homeschooling my girls. But then when we started homeschooling, I was kind of forced to do that. And you know what I realized is that people ask me this all the time, how do you get so much done? And although there's plenty that I don't get done, the reason that I can be productive at home is because I'm home a lot. And so I try to make it a priority. I think with our, you know, transient society, we can just run out and do whatever we want, whenever we want. I really try to be kind of disciplined about it. I try to stay home 3 days a week and really get work done at home, my writing and my, you know, home chores and cooking. And then if I have to run errands, I do. And I'm not legalistic about it, but I just find that cultivating a rich life at home means that you have to, you know, make it a priority. And even just the downtime that it takes to read good books and cook food and, you know, take care of a family and stay connected and educated. All the things that I want to do require me to be home. And I think Corey's right. I think there's an emphasis on our society that all the good things are happening out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we feel like if we're home, maybe we're missing it. But I've really learned the beauty of cultivating that richness at home. And it's one of my favorite things to do. And it, you know, again, I'm not legalistic about it, but I do try to plan my week so that the bulk of my time, you know, I'm at home and my husband works close by. So he comes home for lunch and, you know, we eat dinner at home together every night, and all those little things add up to, you know, kind of a family culture that's more like what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because I think a lot of us say that we would want that, but then our lives don't really reflect that. And we've had a terribly busy spring, and we've been on the go way more than I like. But I find that when I do that, I really get burned out, and I don't have as much margin in my life as I'd like. So I do try to cultivate that. But I totally get what you're saying, and I think it's true that, you know, most of the friends that I know that stay at home don't really stay at home. But I do find the more I can discipline myself to do that, the happier I am, the more productive I am. And, you know, so I do try.
It's very easy to, as you said, there are so many things outside the home. It's very easy to get caught up in these things and find out that the majority of our time is spent in all these other places, because they're inviting things, and they're good things.
Yes.
They're not necessarily bad things. So I hear what you're saying. And I appreciate that you pointed out that you don't want to be legalistic about it, that you don't want to make it in a sense, a law.
A law, right.
Because what happens if we make it a law? What happens if we make it, you know, if you do become legalistic about it, then what does that become? Staying at
right.
home becomes...
It becomes another idol, you know, mm-hmm. it becomes something we kind of worship. I mean, I totally think you're right about that. And I think that just working toward cultivating more family-centered life is good, you know, and our society in general. I mean, I struggled with that so much when I first came home, thinking, what am I missing out on? There's all this good life going on somewhere out there. And now I feel like, oh my goodness, all the good stuff happens at home. So,
Corey, you mentioned that, you know, growing up, your mom worked outside the home as well. And so how have you learned about developing this this atmosphere, cultivating, as Edie said, cultivating a home where learning happens, where there's this whole economy, I guess, if you will, of what goes on in the home?
Oh, sure. Well, I've said to many friends that it's a good thing I wasn't home before we started homeschooling, because I really would have had zero idea what to do with my very young children. And so the homeschooling part is, there's just a huge learning curve with that. And I could write easily hundreds of pages on all the things I've already learned in just 2 years of it. I think that mostly in what I read and the company I keep, I've chosen, you know, very few people who I see as those who are either have done the Christian homeschooling and family-centered type of life well, and try to rub elbows with them, you know, and just talk with them. Certainly, as I read scripture, as I involve myself in Bible studies, whenever I have chance to apply that to my particular situation as a stay-at-home homeschooling mom, I'll do that. And I just love to learn. And so going to special events for women or moms, Central Illinois has one called Hearts at Home. It's wonderful. It happens annually. And so I've attended that a few years. I now attend some homeschool conferences to be sharpened and encouraged that way. There's, you know, books upon books you could be reading if you aren't going to fall asleep while you're reading that, because life is so busy with little ones. But there are so many ways to learn and to grow in it. You almost have to be kind of picky and choosy as to who you're going to let have your attention mm-hmm. on such topics.
Sure. Well, just in case you didn't know, you might know now, both of you might be aware of this, but the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education has a conference coming up this summer, July 15th through the 17th here in St. Louis, called Language, Logic, and Lutheran Education. It's for both educators and parents, home educators, anyone interested in classical and Lutheran education, whether it's in a day school or a home school. It looks pretty neat. They've got a great lineup of speakers. So July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. So there's another one to add to your list.
Yeah.
I've never been to that one, but I loved the lineup they had last year for speaking. I'm sure it's going to be great this year, too. I definitely, if I was still pursuing that with my girls, I definitely would try to make it.
They've got some great folks, including the Veiths, both
yeah.
Dr. Veith. So, yeah, it's a great lineup. Pastor Bart Day, Reverend Bart Day from the Office of National Mission here, he will be speaking as well. James Selby and Dr. Thomas Korchak, who wrote the book Lutheran Education from Wittenberg to the Future. So, a great conference and opportunity to learn about classical and Lutheran education, which I believe both of you have used classical education at home. Is that right?
Yep, we sure did.
Well, recently, The American College of Pediatricians, they have a monthly newsletter, and their May newsletter included an article, Moms Are Children's First Teachers and So Much More, in light of Mother's Day coming up this weekend. And they, in the article, in the post, they mention, they reference, I believe it was Michelle Flourney, a high-ranking Pentagon official who stepped down from her position for a little while to be at home and to care for her family, and was criticized for that by many, and saying, can she and other working women really make it to the top of the profession if family is important too, and raising a question, where do women fit in society? And so I have to ask the question, what influence do moms have on society? What do you think, Corey?
Oh, do you even want to go there, Andy? How much longer is this show?
We've got about 14 minutes left.
I'll just share real briefly in the path we've chosen to educate our children and the homeschool front. And I know that even if you're not homeschooling, parents have just a phenomenal amount of influence in their children, for good or for bad. There's literature all about that. But one of the things that our group focuses on is skills of rhetoric and having our children well equipped to be strong thinkers, writers, and speakers. And when you consider the great vast amount of people who are scared to death to speak in front of anybody, mm-hmm. And then you also look at the vast amount of people who are speaking in front of people, and they're saying all sorts of stuff.
But what kind of stuff are they saying? Yeah.
Yeah. And then I look at what I could do potentially as a mother in equipping my children with the skills to speak well and filling them with the truth, and where those two intersect, how they could change very literally the world around them, wherever God places them. I think that is huge. It is completely has me driven towards wanting to see my children be world changers. And I know that doesn't necessarily mean where people globally will know who they are, mm-hmm. but that they can really change the world and bring God's kingdom to it in greater and greater pieces.
Just because people don't know their names globally doesn't mean that their vocation is any less important wherever they're given to serve. Yeah.
Yep.
Edie, what are your thoughts? How do moms influence society? How do moms shape society?
Oh, I agree with Corey. I'm so passionate about this because I did take a lot of flack when I quit my job. For that same reason, you have this opportunity to do this thing, and that yet you're going to set that aside for a time. And
you went to how many years of school to?
way too many.
Didn't you get that question? You went to how many years of school, and now you're throwing it all away?
yeah, and it was a long time. I mean, it took me 6 years to do undergrad because I had two kids at the time. And then 4 years of medical school, 3 years of residency, and then I practiced for 5 or 6 years, I think almost 6 years before I quit. Yeah, and the thing about it is, again, I think it's that whole shift of our society that everything important must happen, in the public square. And I look at the impact I've been able to have on my own family and my own children in the last 6 years. And I'm just so thankful that I didn't listen to all the hype, that I didn't listen to those voices who say, oh, you're throwing away your education, or no, I'm not. I'm investing it back into the most important people in my life. And as far as, the impact that I had as a physician, and I hope that I was able to impact lives for good, and I think I was. But the impact of that is very wide and very shallow. And the impact that I've been able to have with my own children is so deep. And And I think that that's the kind of transforming impact. That's the impact that changes someone's life, when you really invest yourself in them. And, you know, I'm not at all, I think we all have to do different things at different times, and I'm not even sure if I could go back and change it, if I would, because I just see how God uses our twists and turns always, you know, for his good. But I do think that it's a lie to say that you can have everything you want. Well, you can have it all over a lifetime, but I think we all have to make choices about, you know, what we're going to do at different seasons of our life. And if you have to work to support your family, that's great. If you're career driven and want to do that, you know, we live in a country where you can do that. But I feel like I am so thankful that I've given that, put that aside for a time. Not that I'm, you know, I don't have any plans to go back and do it anytime soon, but I'm not saying it would never happen. But I'm so thankful for the investment in my own family and my own kids. And I think we belittle that sometimes. We feel like, well, we're supposed to do this good for humanity, but mm-hmm. really it starts with the people that you live with. You know, that's your greatest impact. And you know, I think that I've been able to do it and pursue things that I love. And most women, you know, are able to, I think, can do that, can pursue things that they love. I mean, I remember when I first started writing and reading a lot, I was doing that in the margins of my life. I didn't have 3 days to do that. I did that in the margins of my life. And I'm just thankful for that. And I also, I think that we have, those of us who can stay home at least for a season, what I've learned about that is it's just the best life ever. You know, you get to pursue all these, this broad range of wonderful things, cooking and gardening and raising kids. And I mean, I just loved it so much, and I'm thankful for the time that I've been able to do it. And again, I know we all have our specific situations and we have so much freedom in Christ to choose it, but I do not regret for 1 minute those years that I, you know, was home with my girls, homeschooling them. It was such a blessing to us all, and I hope an investment in their life, like Corey says, that will make them thinkers and compassionate toward their neighbor and all the things that we want for our kids.
I think you both have said it. If you want to impact society, if you want to change society, start at home.
Yep.
Start with mm-hmm. with your own family, and teaching them the things that are important first and foremost, God's word, I think what you both have pointed out with classical education is that go for the things that are beautiful, go for what's true, and not focusing on so much what's important to me and what I want, but what is going to serve my neighbor well? What yeah. gifts? What gifts do I have? What gifts do you, as my child, have that can be developed and that can be used to serve your neighbor?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree, and I think that's always, and that's what I'm trying to teach my girls. Just let that become your default. No matter what else changes in your life, you may have to work for a time, you may stay home for a time, you may, you know, that all I think can change. But I think if our default is, how can I use my gifts to serve the people around me? Because there's never a shortage of people who are in need. And using our lives, you know, in service of others, no matter where we find ourselves, I think I've just really tried to beat that drum for my kids and let that be their default. You know, that if your job is taking out the trash at a football stadium, or your job is an Ivy League surgeon taking out people's pancreas, you know, whatever it is, just that default of just serving your neighbor where you are with the gifts you have,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's really what I just tried to instill in them and what I try to remind myself, because I think it's easy to forget because life gets complicated and difficult and busy.
And that's good advice for not just for moms and children, but for all of us. I mean, even as dads and husbands as well, it's good advice. So, well, with just a couple minutes left, in light of this this week on the vocation of women and Mother's Day right around the corner, perhaps husbands and children are listening. I have to ask, we'll start with Corey, what's your ideal Mother's Day?
We have a lot of times planted flowers on Mother's Day when the weather allows, and that has been fun to just have no agenda, but to hang out and be together, you know, and whatever you get done around the house and have some fun together and just enjoy one another's company. I love all of that. You know, I also love to be pampered and be allowed to go away for a little bit. So if it includes, you know, an hour of that and time with my family, woo, that's like hit lotto. We'll see.
Edie, what would be your ideal Mother's Day?
Well, you know, I'm actually in the draft of writing a post about this, because I think so many times we set ourselves up for disappointment for Mother's Day, you know, and we have in our head what we think it should be or what we want it to be. And so the last few years I've just taken a totally different, just a totally different mindset. So my little girls love to do art, so I'll tell them like a week before, like, can you, you know, draw mommy something, or let's do some watercolors. I really want this for Mother's Day. And then I have a son and daughter who sing, so I usually make them sing a song for me. And sometimes I'll text them and say, because they're both in college, so sometimes I'll text and say, okay, here's the song I want you to sing for me for Mother's Day. And we have one of our sons lives with us who is a great cook, so I usually put in my request. And it really, you know, I make them all play Scrabble with me, and I kind of set it up so that I'm not just setting them up for failure, or, you know what I mean, and just trying to say, oh, this would really be special if you did this, or let's do this, and so just simple ways that they can actually just use their gifts. It's actually the things that I love most about my kids, when you see their gifts shine through, and so that's kind of what we've done the last few years, and it's fun, and I try not to, you know, have unrealistic expectations, because it's really not about one day, you know, it's about just cultivating an atmosphere of serving each other all the time.
So what you're saying is, by focusing on their gifts, then you don't have to endure trying to pretend that you like burnt pancakes.
That's right. That's exactly right. I know which one I need to ask to cook for me.
Very good. Very good. Well, I have enjoyed this conversation. I've learned quite a bit, and I hope that our listeners have learned from you as well, what I've learned about vocation, the gifts that mothers and wives are to us and to society as well. Our guests today have been Edie Wadsworth. She is a blogger at stay-at-home mom, sort of, and a blogger at lifeingraceblog.com. Edie, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure. Nice to meet you too, Corey.
Yes, you too.
And our guest, Corey Wysocki, she's a stay-at-home mom and certified director of Christian education and I think advocate for all stay-at-home moms. Corey, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
My pleasure, Andy. It was really fun.
Blessings
to
you.
Thank you, and happy Mother's Day to all your listeners.
Thank you. Coming up in just a little bit, we've got Moments of Assurance right here on Listener Supported Worldwide KFUO. Stick around for that with Reverend Mark Hawkinson.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.